just politician talking about his brand new mission. Liked his plans, but they came undone when it got around to God and guns. I don't know how he grew up, but it sure wasn't down at the hunting club. 'Cause if it was, he'd understand just a little bit more about the working man. God and guns keep us strong. That's what this country was founded on. Well, we might as well give up and run. If we let them take our God and guns. Yeah, out here in my neck of the woods, where God is great and guns are good, you really can't know that much about them if you think we're better off without them. Oh, there was a time we ain't forgot, you could rest all night with your doors on. Say your prayers and you thank the Lord for that peacemaker in the dresser drawer.
Patriot Studios, this is Soldiers of Patriotism.
Hey, welcome to Soldiers of Patriotism, fellow patriots from all walks of life. Michael B. has a respiratory infection, so I'm sorry to say we'll not be speaking today, but he's going to be here. He's here. But I got my brother's back from another mother's. Or from another mother, and he's here, so we can talk about him, and he can't talk much back to us. But normally we start our show off with a rant, but I want to do this show on a more positive note, seeing as, you know, we have a guest that is very positive, and I want you all to hear his story. Having said that, you know, I would like to read the downer headlines today, I guess. And then we can progress to much better things. And just for the sake of clarity, I guess, here we get the headlines. Afghan soldier kills two more American troops. String of Iraq car bomb blast kills at least 32. Muslim protesters torch Buddhist temples in Bangladesh. Militant group Al-Sabit attacks church in Kenya. Bomb explodes near Islamic school in Nigeria. Grenade attack on fair in Thailand injures 30. Car bomb kills four in Syria. I mean, does anybody see a pattern here? You know, I'm trying to find out how many Christians killed people today. Has anybody looked that up? This is interesting. But, chilling out for a bit, and I want to get right back into some positive things, because every day we listen to negative things, negativity everywhere. The media touts it. It's everywhere that we go. And I found the author of the book that we're about to interview here. I found it easy to read and fascinating, man. It was just, it was a great read for me. It was something that I could relate to. I could understand. There was certain things in there, not everything, but certain things I could relate to. And I, you know, I wanted to get him on the show because I thought he had a different perspective, maybe, as far as how to look at how to look at the world, how to look at yourself, really. When you look at yourself, the world seems to be open, and when you look at yourself in a good way, the world seems to be open, and just it's all out there for you, man. You know, it's kind of like it's kind of like that girl. You know, you're just flipping your hat off in the air. And you're like out there going, man, you know, this is America. But what we've come to be anymore is really wimpish. And what our guest today on Soldiers of Patriotism espouses is that, you know, you can overcome adversity, diversity, and all these other isities that they come up with. And isms, and you can be your own person, and you can be the best that you are, or that you can be. That's all that anybody asks, I think, out of anybody else. Whether it be, you know, ourselves, whether it be our mates, whether it be our family, just be the best. And on that note, I want to introduce Rockstar Rick. He's going to be kind of co-hosting my show with me today. Rick, your mic's hot, so welcome in, brother.
Thank you very much. How are you doing, Bing?
I'm doing good. I'm nervous as a deer in the headlights here, but but hey, man, I got in. I was able to log in, and, you know. But,
oh, yeah.
But I think everybody, if everybody would pick up this Harry's book here, our guest, I think that you will see something in yourself in the book, and it's easy to read, man. As you said, ninth grader can read this. I think even a sixth grader can read this. But I'm without further ado, let us get Harry in here because I think he has a lot to say, and I want him to say it. Harry, you're live, man. Welcome to Soldiers of Patriotism, and I know I flubbed that a little bit, but I was ad-libbing, man.
Well, thank you, Bing. I certainly appreciate your very kind intro, and of course, I had to write it for nine-year-olds because that's about my mentality, you know. I've got to keep it where it is. And although I've not met Michael, I want to apologize to him in advance because, Bing, with you and Rick, I mean, that's bad enough. Now you add me. I mean, any ratings that Michael ever had, they're going down the tubes with us. There's no question.
Oh, no.
That.
Now,
Harry. Oh, no.
I'm a host of a talk show here on Conservative Nation Radio, so I know how to bring people in, too.
The white and blue, man. Check it out.
It's like Sarah Palin not long ago. I don't remember now who she was talking to, but somebody was on. They were talking about, you know, the great and fineness and all the wonderful things with regard to Texas. And, of course, that's where Michael's from. And Sarah Palin said something to the effect of, yeah, we've been talking about splitting Alaska in half, and that way Texas will be the third largest state of the United States. Of course, now if you're President Obama, I've just got to bring up, you know, that he thinks it's 57 states. But hey, who knows? One day to the next.
Well, now he said 50. He said that he's been to 57 states, one more to go, and he can't make it to Alaska and Hawaii. So I'm thinking he thinks it's about 60.
There might be more than that too, if you count the Muslim countries. Yeah.
Really? But, no, I didn't mean to lead us in that direction, but that just kind of popped in my mind as I was talking. I throw that out for the maddening crowd.
Oh, that's okay, brother. You know, I mean, this show goes a lot of different directions, man.
Exactly.
You know, but
it's all good.
Take me back. Why? What was the impetus for you to write this book? I mean, what really made you write this book? I know you had a lot of family involvement, man. You had, like, you know, your brothers and, you know, everybody. You don't have no sisters, I don't think. Or maybe you don't. Maybe you do, but you don't know of them. But Everybody was basically involved in this book. And when I read it, man, I couldn't put it down. It took me about 2.5 days to read it fully. And I just loved it. It was like, you know, you just kind of spoke to me, you know, and people that might have grown up being picked on bullies for one reason or another and that kind of thing. And I just want to know what sparked this. Is there something that happened?
You know, I'm going to start by saying something that, you know, you many times don't want to say, because any time you say God or Jesus Christ, the first thing people want to do is either throw their arms around you or throw a couple stones at you. But in actual truth, I was sitting in my couch in Tampa, Florida, and I was just kind of sitting there, and I was watching television, wasn't really thinking about anything. And a voice said to me, as loud and as clear as the two of you, write a book. Oh, I had never thought of writing a book. I mean, it was not something that, I have written a lot of sales reports and, you know, a lot of different business things. But as far as writing a book for human consumption, never did it. But for some reason, along with the voice, came the knowledge that I absolutely could. And I turned to my wife, and much to my surprise, I said, "Honey, I'm going to read a book." And she says, "Great, when?" And I said, "Well, right now." She said, "Great." That was it. The other thing that really surprised me, I didn't tell my family that I was reading a book. I mean, that I was writing a book or anything of the sort. You guys know the way family is. They love you, and they're close to you. Sometimes they're too close. Sometimes they'll be the first ones to say, "You write a book? Are you kidding me?" I mean, you know, your dad doesn't know anything as far as your kids are concerned. And, you know, the people around you, they know you as a businessman, but certainly not a guy that writes books. So the easiest thing to do is to discount it. Yet I was surprised to find out that other people that knew me, that I did mention it to, not a one of them was surprised that Harry Glossinger was going to write a book. And that not only did it amaze me, but it gave me great power of thought that I'm not the only one or the voice that told me that I could do this or I couldn't do it. So I sat down and I started writing it. And it's kind of funny, Bing. You said as you were kind of starting your dialogue, that you know, you mentioned that I stuttered when I was younger, and I really didn't have any intention of even putting that part into the book. It was almost an afterthought, and it was one of those godsend things, as far as I'm concerned, because it seems to be one thing that gravitates everybody to the book. And my real meaning for the book, which is to know and like and love each other, and you know, sparkling and, you know, putting in humor now and again, because I think we all kind of know that humor is the thing that kind of binds us all together. But the other thing that binds us all together is adversity, you know, things yep. that maybe weren't all that easy, things that you know. Maybe mine was stuttering, and maybe somebody else's was whatever it was. But we all have problems. It isn't all fun, as much sometimes as we like to entertain ourselves as much as we can. There is some reality that comes in.
Well, I have to say, Harry, man, when I read the book, and like I said, I teared up because there's a couple few places in there that I just got that proverbial lump in my throat, you know, and I'm going, man, I can relate to what, you know, what he's going through or what he went through or whatever, you know, and, you know, or I could relate, you know, but it's just, It's got something in it for everybody, and I just wish people would read it because it's just a very good. And before we get off track or whatever, you know, wherever the show may go, I don't know, because Michael ain't always doing so kind of like not lost, but anyways, please give out where people can get this book.
They would get it is an ebook, and they would go to residentbeanbag.com. Of course, Resident Beanbag is the title of the book, residentbeanbag.com. And I would also want to mention for those that buy the book that if they would put in radio, because we're on talk radio here, where do I have, just a second here, I have a note that I put something down, and of course, here it is, in the discount code. If you would type in radio, R-A-D-I-O, I'm offering anybody from the show who wants to read the book the biggest percentage of discount I've ever given of 25%. And that will bring the cost of the book down to about $7.50. And as far as I'm concerned, I don't mind talking about or hawking the book whatsoever. I think that people can use some good humor and some maybe good thoughts in their life. And I think that for $7.50, I would be very surprised if most people didn't say that they got something decent out of it.
Hmm. Well, it's definitely worth it. It's definitely worth it, man. I got to tell you, my emotional gamut ran amok when I read the book, so... in some areas I got, felt hatred, in some areas I felt elated, in some areas I sat there and said, oh man, it's like, that was me when I was growing up. But what is a resident bean bag?
Years ago, I was living in Naperville, Illinois, and I had two good friends that were somewhat like me in that they were pretty outgoing, very friendly, a lot of jokes and fun around and laughing. And I don't even remember who it was anymore that said it. It could have been me or one of them. But one of us said, boy, I'll tell you what, I feel like a resident beanbag. And ever since I heard or said that, I thought it was funny. I thought it was something that somebody would remember. And a resident beanbag is meant to be, at least from my vernacular, somebody that is just, what would I say, not the perfect, Somebody that maybe only has 40 years of education and not 90. Maybe somebody that has failed in more things that they've succeeded in, and somebody that maybe doesn't know how to say just the right thing at the right time all the time, but has a good head about him, has a good sense about him, and more importantly, wants to be somebody decent, wants to be someone that'll stand up for the right thing. And a lot of times, an awful lot of those people, and I'm included in this, we feel like we'd like to go out on the Western street with our six guns a-blazing to show that we're the good guy and we're wearing a white hat. But that opportunity isn't given to us anymore. We need to, and I think that men and women, but I think most particularly men, need to stand for something, need to feel that their family thinks that they're special, that their wife thinks that they're special, and their friends do, and that you have a situation and a circumstance where you're okay. You may not have what the guy down the street has, and as I said about education, you may not have the great education, you may not have a lot of things. But that doesn't determine who you are. What determines who you are is who you are. Do you stand for something? Mm-hmm. Do you lie? Do you cheat? Do you steal? All things that are not admirable traits. And if you do, you're going to end up getting what you deserve, which is the way you handle yourself, the way you accord yourself. And but you can, and I try to also point out in the book, too, that, you know, we're all victims sometimes of a lot of things, not good things necessarily, but you can change them. You know, if you don't want to be looked at as an alcoholic, stop drinking. If you want to be looked at as somebody of substance, don't lie anymore. Don't steal anymore. Don't cheat. Stand up for yourself and make yourself looked at as who you want to be. And you got to stop playing the game of well, I can just you know, let them think that I'm this person even though I'm not. The biggest problem with liars and the biggest problems with people that purport themselves to be what they're not is you don't remember falsehoods and lies. You remember truth. So somebody comes up and says, oh, Harry, I remember that conversation about that red Corvette that you had. That was so great. Where did you drive that? I said, oh, that was in Sarasota. Well, when I told the story, it was in Columbus, Ohio. And they look at me like, well, now, that's not what you told me. Well, that's what happens, is you get caught because you're not telling the truth. So that's a long-winded aspect of saying that a resident beanbag is, and I don't know why I just didn't say this at the beginning, is a normal, everyday Joe who has done stupid things, has had their problem, but by golly, they can still stand up today.
Yeah.
And here's some ways of you doing it.
Yeah. What you were saying, sorry about that. Go ahead, Bing.
Go ahead, Rick.
Yeah, well, I was saying that what Harry has said kind of reminded me a lot of a quote by John Wooden where he said, be more concerned with your character than your reputation, because your character is what you really are, while your reputation is merely what others think you are.
Think you are, yeah.
Indeed. Indeed.
Yeah, and Harry in his book, you know, has some resident beanbag traits, which are centered, you know, courtesy, you know, understanding, patience, faith. I think those all make up what normal people are. Now, I don't know about abnormal people because I don't consider myself one, but I'm really interested here in talking about some of these traits real quick, if you will. How much of a profound aspect did they have on your life?
Now, that's regard to what, Rick? I'm not sure. Bing, I think I didn't hear all that completely.
Oh, well, I was talking about the resident beanbag traits.
Yep.
And in your book, you said centered, courtesy, understanding, and faith, patience.
Right.
So, and those are all part of what makes up a human being, in my opinion.
Yeah, no question.
My question was, you know, could you just quickly elaborate on each one? Just, in other words, you know, centered. Yeah, there is a part of man that's ego, and I think, you know, that's a good thing, in my opinion, to a point. You know,
no
but
question.
I think there's a lot of people in society that think that ego is bad. You know, the ego is wrong. That we shouldn't have an ego, and centered really doesn't mean ego. It just means that you're kind of at peace with what you believe in my opinion.
That's right. Well, I think that to wrap them all together, I think that it's like, you know, Mom and Dad told us when we were young, you know, a lot of times you are judged by your friends, by the company that you keep, that you're judged by the way you accord yourself. You're judged by the way you deal with people. You're judged by the manner in which your what you say can be counted on. And, you know, all of those things wrap into who you are. I mean, we're all kind of victims of our experiences to a degree, some of them quite good, some of them quite bad. But when all is said and done, it's not so important to go in that direction as much as it is to give people the best of who you are. And it's really incredibly easy, and that's kind of one of the reasons that I would like people to read the book, is so many times we hear somebody say something, and it's just, oh, yeah, more of the same. But, you know, there's a way of doing things to keep yourself going in the right direction. I mean, people have said to me, well, Harry, you're kind of naturally a funny guy, funny looking anyway. And by the way, I did notice, Bing, that you didn't put my picture up on your site. So I realize that's kind of indicative to keeping the women and kids off the streets. But anyway, what's that, Bing?
That's fine. That's fine. We got your book up there.
Couldn't agree with you more. You know, some people are made for radio and not TV. There's no question about that. But anyway, you know, little stupid things. I mean, you have to remember who you want to be first sometimes before you can be. In other words, if you want to be somebody that's happy all the time, you need to set yourself up to be able to do that. I got one thing that's riddled through the book, and you'll know it, Bing, as soon as I say it, is conscious choice.
Mm-hmm.
You know, conscious choice is you can choose to be happy. You know, you can choose to be a nice fella, a nice lady. You can choose to not use bad language. You can choose to not, do ugly un-American things. You just can. But sometimes you need to remind yourself. And one of those reminders that I've always found, I always talk to people, always. Doesn't make any difference. As a matter of fact, some people, I remember my daughter, she'd get mad, she'd say, Dad, maybe they didn't want to talk to you. But I guarantee you there are very few people that I talk to that walk away without having a smile on their face. The other day was at a store, and there was a 15 items or less lane, and that's where I was, and the lady that was in front of me, she had probably 10 or 11 items, and one of them was a big bunch of bananas. And I said to her, I said, you know, ma'am, when you're in the express lane here, they don't just count the individual items that you have. They count the number of bananas that you have there as well. And she first looked at me like, oh. And then she realized that I was laughing. And she laughed, and I laughed, and the gal behind the counter laughed. And it was fun. And it's stupid. Of course it is. But if you give people the opportunity to relate to you, to say hi to you, to do something that gets a conversation going back and forth, it's amazing the number of people that will jump at that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to laugh at yourself. I mean, you know, that's great
big
courage.
Hard thing.
it takes great courage to sit there and laugh at yourself. You were talking about people have the decision to be a good person. They also have a decision to be a bad person.
Absolutely.
And, you know, and that's the distinction that we need to make. In your book, okay, let's get back to the basics here. You had a stuttering problem in your book.
I sure did.
Okay, and it made you turn into a funny guy, which I've, you know, collaborated with you a little bit here as far as emails back and forth, and you are one funny dude. Sometimes I don't get your humor, but, you know, maybe it's because I'm younger than you.
Oh, thanks. Thanks, Bing.
Okay.
Sure, go for the cheap one.
I don't know, Harry, you sound like you're about
late
20s, early 30s.
Hey, Wait, just wait till I get back at Michael, because he can't sit there and call in and talk to me because he is bad.
I'm just frankly tickled for you, Bing. I mean, there you are, a guy from Tennessee, only has been wearing shoes for about the last 30 days. This is a wonderful thing going on here.
At least you got shoes older than me, I think. So. But Barbara in chat said she bought your book, and can she get a signed copy?
No, because it's an ebook. It isn't available. I'm giving some consideration to maybe contacting a publisher or something like that. But right now it is strictly available as an ebook.
Okay, well maybe you can hook up with Barbara and send her like a little post-it note or something.
I'd be happy to do that.
So she could post it on her computer. Barbara, I hope that answers your question. If I have indoor plumbing. It's the questions we get sometimes. But anyways, I wanted to get into this fight that you got in. You started out, you interjected humor, in your book. You found that humor was a good way to get affiliated with other people and so on. And then you found out that fighting was what you needed to do, I guess, to survive in a way. You got in a fight with some kids out in front of the school.
Yes.
You were knocked out. You were bloodied. You were, late for the bus ride home, and your mom was worried about you. And, can you tell us about that?
Well, it's, I don't know, how do you say it? When you have an impediment, when you have something that's obvious, you're cross-eyed, you have an overbite, you have weird ears, you stutter, whatever the thing is that puts you to be a little different, and God knows when you're a kid, if you don't have anything different, they will come up with something different. But when you have a stutter that's kind of ever-present and you can't walk away from it, it marks you, and they make fun of you. And I found out that I had a choice, I could either, cry or be despondent or hide in the corner, or I could attack it by humor, and that's what I did. Somebody would say something about my stuttering, and I would I'd make a joke about it somehow or misdirect it somehow. And that worked fine, but as I got older, I'm 6'3", and back then I was a pretty good sized boy, not some great big Charles Atlas, but my dad had all of us kids working in the garden, cutting the lawn, and doing various things when we were kids. So we didn't have any sissies in the Glossinger household. And so I was a decent sized boy, and but I wasn't a fighter. I didn't want to be a fighter. I always kind of had, and probably because of my family, we always kind of had a reasonable centerness to us. At least I felt that we did. So one day I was on the playground. I was actually walking by it, and this guy was giving me a bad time. As a matter of fact, two of them were. And there were some girls around, and of course that always made the circumstances worse. Nobody wants to be made a fool of around the ladies. And I just had enough, Bing. I just had enough. That was all there was to it. And I hit him. And I mean, it was only once, but I hit him, and as I said in the book, by the time he stopped rolling, his clothes were out of season. And that kind of established right then and there that there's a new part of Harry that we didn't know, and that is he can hit you pretty hard. So I kind of rode that fame into high school, and now we're getting into that that episode that you're talking about.
Yeah, I just like, you know, I was thinking back to my days growing up, you know, and I got bullied by a gang of people, and really I was kind of like, you know, just I wouldn't have jogged, but I was just kind of like the, I guess you would call it the stoner guy, you know.
Yeah.
I was just the dude on the outside, the fringe of society, you know, and that kind of thing. And what I related to on that is they, you know, followed me home. There was about 10 of them. And girls, too. And I'm like, what the hell, you know?
Yeah.
They followed me home one day, and they were throwing rocks. And then finally, my next-door neighbor jumped on me. He was a kid going to school. And he jumped on me, and, you know, and they didn't beat me up really nothing. They just intimidated me. And I said, you know, I'm not putting up with this. You know, I didn't put up with it that long. That was the only episode that ever happened. But I said, if I don't nip it in the bud, it's going to keep on continuing on. Mm-hmm. So I spent that night thinking of what I'm going to do at the bus stop the next morning. You know, how much trouble I'm going to get into, if it, you know, it works out my way and all that. You know, and I went up to the bus stop, and the kid's name was Johnny Nuttall. I'll never forget it. And I went right up to him. He was sitting on a little platform there, waiting on the bus. And all his little gang was there. And I went up to him, you know, I just basically slapped him in the face. Because I knew he would slap somebody in the face and then start crying a little bit, you know. So after that, it was just it was uphill for me, downhill for him, because he was groveling in the dirt, cut off a bit of his tongue. And I just picked up my books, got on the bus. I went to school, and the next thing I know, I get called down to the dean's office. And we had a very cool dean of boys there, man. I mean, this
I understand, Bing, why you said that you related to my story with regard to my freshman year of high school so well. And it's I think that's kind of what I was saying earlier. We all can relate to each other if we take the time to talk to each other a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And my freshman year, I mean, I was helping some kids out of school, and walked up to the parking lot there, and I'm just helping the people put the stuff into their car, and three or four of these big palookas with their girlfriends, they thought it was going to be a real fun time with old hairy boy, you know, to make me talk and get me stuttering, and you know, so they could joke about me and ha 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 ha. And one of them got behind me, and, you know, you do the stupid kid stuff. Somebody gets behind you, and then the guy in front pushes you, and you fall over the guy. So I fall over the guy, and I hit the side of a car with my head. And I snapped. I really did. I don't know. I think all of us go so far, and we're not going to go any further. So
I know how that is. Cause,
I think I think all of us do.
Yeah.
I think all of us.
Well, yeah. Well,
and they just proceeded to beat me like a drum. And the real moral of the story to me was, all I wanted, guys, was to be left alone. That's all I wanted. I didn't want anything else. Just you make your way, I'll make mine. Just leave me alone. Well, that was on a Friday afternoon. Monday, I go back to school, and all of a sudden, nobody's looking at me much. And they're kind of ignoring me, and I'm thinking, uh-oh, what's going on here? So get into lunch, and a friend of mine comes up and says, Harry, why didn't you tell me about Friday? And I said, what am I going to tell you about Friday? Three guys beat the stuffing out of me. Well, and you know, so what's to tell about that? And they said, well, they said, that's not the story we got. The story we got is they kept knocking you down and you kept getting up. And I said, well, I couldn't have been getting up doing much because I don't see a mark on any of them. And what had happened was I didn't even know that I was doing it. I mean, I was, I don't know. I don't.
Adrenaline.
Pardon me?
Kind of like you were so full of adrenaline that.
Adrenaline rush
that you didn't even know what you did.
That's exactly it. That's exactly it. And the good thing that came from it, not that anybody likes a beating, but the good thing that came from it was everybody thought, I'm going to leave him alone. And they did.
Yeah.
And that's exactly what I wanted. All I wanted them to do was leave me alone. And they did. They thought that I was the second coming of the mighty Atlas. And the truth is, in my entire grade school and high school life, I was in a fight. I think I put in the book three times, but it was four. And I didn't like a single one of them. I wasn't happy to be beaten or to beat anybody else. Anybody that wants to walk around that thinks that it's a good or nice deal to hurt somebody else, there's something seriously wrong with them. And they
You're
need
right.
more help than I can give them. I hate bullies,
it's
though.
Not,
That's the only
not.
Thing in life that I can say that I truly hate is a bully. There's just
not many things worse. I agree with you, man. And like when I went down to the dean of bullies, he called me in the room, and he said, you know, I'm thinking, okay, the worst is going to happen to me, man. I got in a fight at the bus stop. And, you know, this kid was pretty much beat up pretty good. And it was all my rage at that point in time taken out on him. You know, I should have probably took it out on all 10 of them or whatever there was there, but I took it out on him because he was the lead instigator of it. And the dean of boys asked me, and the guy was so cool, and he said, Bud, he used to call me Bud, I don't know why, but he said, I heard you got in a fight with so-and-so. And I said, yeah. And he said, well, he's in the hospital right now because he's missing some of his tongue. I said, well, you know, I mean, I can laugh about it now because it wasn't me, you know, but, I guess I feel sorry for the dude. And I said, well, I didn't know about that. And he goes, yeah, he said, I just want to know one thing, man. And I said, all right, you know, here it comes, you know, did you start it? What, you know, and he said, did you beat him? And I said, yeah. And he said, okay, go back to class. Because nobody else liked the kid either. You see what I'm saying? they all knew the kid needed that, you know. And
I'm sorry that happened to you, Bing. That isn't fun for anybody. Sometimes they try to make us feel like a jackrabbit at a coyote picnic, you know?
Yeah, right.
You know, it's not no fun. I didn't like doing that, but it was something that I had to do to make sure that I was defending myself, you know.
Absolutely right.
Certain things in life, you know, you can defend yourself, you can sit there and promote yourself, you can be the greatest person in the world, but when somebody, you know, finds a character flaw in you, whatever, you know, they want to attack that and that alone, you know, instead of looking at all the other good traits in your life. You're ex-Army.
Here. Yes.
Correct. And I'm really interested. This is the thing that I love this part in your book is when you got into the fight in the Army and what your sergeant told you. And if you don't mind, and if you could share that with us.
It was... No doubt. Now, first of all, a little background. You have to understand, when I was in the service, I was 17. I was sitting around the house, and I recognized that I was not getting any place. The guys that I hung around with, you know, they were either going to be saints or killers, and they had a better shot of being a killer. And not that they were bad, they were doing a lot of bad stuff, and I just knew that it was going to be me if I kept it up. So I talked to my folks because I was only 17 and required their signature for me to go into the service, and So they said that they would do that. I'm sure that they celebrated that big time without me knowing it, you know, with the flares and the cheers and everything else. But so I'm 17 and have a stuttering problem, and you know, so one thing with stuttering, if I was around friends or I was around family, I didn't necessarily stutter all that terribly. And the people that know you, they know that you stutter, and they make immediate amends for it because they're used to it. But I get into the service and doing different things or being pushed a little bit or being nervous or being put in a situation that you're not used to, it really brings on the stuttering gene. I mean, big time. And, of course, a military, the Army, a new set of circumstances easily did that. And this one day, this was basic training. I guess we're probably there a couple weeks. And there was a guy really making a lot of fun of me. And I got up, and I guess he thought that I got up and I was going to do something to him. And actually, I was just going to get up to walk away. And he hit me right in the eye. And I mean, man, he hit me. And I'm scrambling around the bunk to get a hold of him. Well, a couple, three guys grab me, and another guy grabs him, and then the buck sergeant comes in, who's the platoon leader, and they haul us over to the first sergeant. And I don't know how many of the good folks listening are familiar with basic training. But if there's one person you don't want to have any personal contact with, it's the first sergeant who runs the place. His name was Murray L. Christmas. And he was, I said that I'm 6'3". He was probably about 5'10", ripcord thin. I mean, he was just 100% muscle. And all of the guys in my time, as far as the sergeants and first sergeants and that type of thing, these were all World War II guys. I mean, these weren't guys that just fell off the turnip truck. These were guys from World War II. So here's this first sergeant who we're taken into, this me and this other guy. Now, I mean, there were pictures on his back wall of axe murders he participated in and people that he'd killed because he had nothing else to do, and all of these kind of fun shots, you know, 8x10 glossies all over the place. Of course, I'm taking a little liberal freedom here with that. And he tells us to no, actually, we're still standing up. And he's saying that, you know, basically, if we want to fight again, that we should come and see him. He enjoys nothing better than a good fight. So the other guy tells his side of the story, and then he gets to me, and what do? I start stuttering. And so he sends the other guy out. And he tells me to sit down, and I'm scared to death. I mean, I'm 17-year-old young punk kid. So he tells me to sit down, and I sit down, and I miss the chair. So there's old Harry Boy, chair, and him on the floor. So I get up and sit down, and I'm thinking, this guy's going to kill me. You know, my life as I know it is over.
That had to have been rough, man.
Yeah.
It's still a little tough. But anyway.
Well, I imagine.
He says to me, it's not a matter of the names they call you. It's the matter of the names you call yourself.
Correct.
And I did what I'm doing now. I sat there crying like a baby.
Hmm.
And I probably hadn't cried since I was, I don't know, maybe five. But, you know, this man, this guy that I feared, that I knew was going to do something terrible to me. He said something so kind. I couldn't process it.
Hmm.
Yeah, just to reiterate, he said in his book, it says, he said, son, it's not a matter of the names they call you. It's a matter of the names you call yourselves.
Yep, that's right.
Hmm.
And that's just, that hit me. That was like, wow, you know. That he
Bam.
Was that of an honorable guy to sit there and say that to you.
It's a funny thing, Bing, because I knew that you were going to bring it up because it was an important part of the book and a thing, you know, something that I had related to many times during the book. And I swore to myself that this time I wasn't going to tear up, but it did. And I kind of hope that all of us have had what we call the defining moment, you know, that because I was 17 and I desperately needed something in my life to help straighten me out, because I knew that I wasn't in a bad place, but I was smart enough to know that I wasn't in a good place. I didn't have any good positive direction. And he gave it to me. And I, you know, First Sergeant Christmas, I'll tell you what, there may not be a lot of people in my life that I don't remember, but I guarantee you I remember him. What a man. He sure did great for me.
He actually deserves a medal, really, for just that, you know. I mean,
yeah.
Exactly.
He took and changed your whole outlook on life, didn't he, at that point?
He sure did.
When I read that, man, I was sitting there, just like you, sitting there, you know, in tears, man. I'm like, God, you know, I can't believe that a master sergeant would sit there and say that other than get back to latrine cleaning or something, you know, whatever.
Get those potatoes going, boy. Yeah.
Yeah. But he, I think he obviously had some things in the back of his craw, too, that maybe made him say that or let him say that.
Yeah.
And, it, you know, you brought that up about realization or some kind of thing that happens to you in your life that makes you change direction or whatever it is. And I don't know. I'm sitting here. I have these little. How do you actually realize that? I mean, I know that, you know, okay, God, you know, I find God, that was a realization to me. But I'm thinking, on other things, how do I realize? There's so many things that happen to me every day, and it's like, okay, it's hard to pick and choose which ones to follow, which ones not to follow. In a lot of aspects, it's just, it gets crazy anymore, you know? And
I think every once in a while, and it isn't something that happens, I don't think it happens all that often, you have something that speaks to your life, that speaks to your heart. I knew that the one thing that identified me was my speech or inability thereof. And it defined me. It kept me from being who I thought was maybe tucked in there, but I couldn't get out because every time I saw somebody, every time that I dealt with somebody, they knew me for what I was. I was somebody that stuttered. And if I stuttered, I probably wasn't all that smart or worthwhile anyway.
Hmm.
So then when somebody defines it for me and tells me that it's what you say to yourself, buddy, it's what you say to yourself. It's it's conscious choice. You choose what you're going to put into your brain. Don't let somebody else do it for you. That's what he was saying. And I know, I'm sure that my mom and dad had told me that a number of times, but they're mom and dad. You know, nobody listens to mom and dad. But this guy that I knew was going to kill me talks to me so lovingly and kindly. And he's this World War II first sergeant, for heaven's sakes. It was just kind of, it was one of those perfect storm kind of things to me. And that's what really got me launched, Bing. That's what really launched me into figuring out ways for me to stop stuttering. And I mean, you know, back then this was 1962. For heaven's sakes, we didn't have any internet or anything of the sort that you could go to for stop stuttering, and you have 15,000 pages you can look up.
Yeah, right. Yeah. One thing that always gets me is, you know, okay, there's this minister named David Ring. He has cerebral palsy, and his saying is, "I have cerebral palsy. What's your problem?" And I mean, just what you said. I mean, you know, I mean, I know that you don't stutter now, but back then, I mean, like, my mindset back then would have been, okay, I stutter. What's your problem? You know, look at yourself. Don't look at me.
Well,
yeah,
unfortunately,
when you're young,
you
know, I mean,
and you're going through it, you don't have a lot of self-actualization. You know, you just kind of, take it and accept it as it happens. And when you have years and years and years of people making fun of your stuttering, it is self-defining. And I was just incredibly fortunate that I was in either the right or the wrong place at the right or wrong time, certainly right
exactly.
for me, that I was able to hear something from someone that I internalized to the point that I did something about it.
Well, yeah, one thing you also said that I thought was just was funny, I guess cute, it's that you talk about how to talk, how to deal with each other, and you said something about, I don't know, it was a joke or whatever, but you said last Sunday my wife and I were in church and the minister said that the three most common causes of divorce involve communication, sex, and money. Your wife leaned over to you and said, "We should be okay. We don't have any of those." I mean, this is the humor you inject through the book, and it's just—it's fascinating. It just—it keeps you going. You know, it's like you talk about a lot of bad things. Not a lot, but I mean, you talk about some bad things that happened, but a lot of people can relate to it. But you inject so much humor into the book that it just makes you just want to keep reading it. You know, at least it did me. I mean,
I think that's what kept me going forward is that I was always able to have a good sense of humor about me. I think I got a lot of that from my family. That, you know, if you can't, as you said earlier, not only laugh at them but laugh at yourself, and to maintain a sense of humor and find ways to continue the humor by, as I said, talking to people and doing various things that kept you moving forward. That without a sense of humor, I mean, I think you're in serious trouble. And I remember a long time ago, I don't remember where I read this or somebody told it to me, but they were this guy at this big company was talking about they have this bulletin board with all this information on it, and that nobody was reading it. And somebody made the recommendation, well, why don't you put some jokes up there and some cute stories? And they did. Well, all of a sudden, they found out almost overnight that readership changed dramatically because there was something to go to that board for, humor. And I thought, well, that makes perfect sense to me. That always made perfect sense to me.
Humor and music is what kind of tames the savage beast in a lot of aspects.
Oh, yeah.
I'd like to take time to get Kurt Blackwood on online here. He's been holding for like 45 almost 50 minutes, 45 minutes. And I'm sure he's got a question or a comment.
Sure.
Or two. He always does. But let's get him online just a second. Kurt, you there?
Yeah, hey. Brother Harry, listen, I'm hanging on the phone here because I can't get the VTR chat up on my computer, but then I listen on the phone anyway. But, hey, listen, I appreciate so much your being on here and revealing, as it were, the heartbeat of where your stories came from there. I can so relate to some of the things that you said, and there's great philosophy. There's more than philosophy in what you've said and in what you've apparently written, which I got to admit here that I've not read your book. It's on my list of things to do, but my list of things to do is way longer than my doer is. But I will get around to it, because especially now that I've heard some of the excerpts out of it, because I know I'm gonna like it more having heard what you have to say about it, probably than I would have if I had just gone into it not knowing where it came from. Knowing something about the author and something about where the author is coming from when they tell a story is worth a lot there. And I can kind of relate in a way to what you're talking about the stuttering problem. I had a thing. When I was a kid growing up, I wore glasses, and glasses on me when I was 4 years old. And in 55, and I can't do math that fast in my head to tell you what year. So it's about 1940 that they put glasses on me. And when I started school, not that many kids wore glasses in those days. So you know what the first nickname you got was Four Eyes.
Yep, you bet.
I
grew up learning to hate the word Four Eyes. And I guess I didn't deal too well with it, because when I got just a few years on me, much later in life, I developed a special place in my heart for a song called A Boy Named Sue.
Great song.
Good song indeed.
Because my solution to the problem was, some guy would call me Four Eyes and I'd bust him. And my parents, we didn't have a lot of money when I was a kid. We never went hungry because we grew all our own food and all that good stuff, but we didn't have much money to spend. And I couldn't quite figure out, later in life I thought about it, I wondered how come Mom and Dad never really, you know, told my butt up from getting so many pairs of glasses busted. But they didn't. When I got a pair of glasses busted in a fight, they pretty much knew why. I was taken up from my own self. I was defending myself, as it were, from smart alecks, which may not have always been the right way to do it, but that's what I did. But they didn't chastise me. They just bought me a new pair of glasses and sent me on back out in the world. So I can, I kind of know what you're talking about there, about getting people wanting to jack with you, you know, because you're not exactly like all the rest of them. But anyway, Brother Harry, I appreciate so much what you said, and like I said, there's not just wisdom. There's some gospel in what I've heard you saying. Okay, it's my pleasure to have met you.
God bless you, my friend, and you. Believe me, very nice of you to call in and share with us.
Well, Kurt, brother,
my pleasure.
Stay online, man, if you can.
Yeah.
I'm just going to put you on hold here for a second. But, if you want to call in, the number is 718-305-7176.
And you can also
Skype.
Yeah,
just click the little Skype button up there and you can get in. Harry, I wanted to ask you about, like, some of the recent episodes that you see coming out of the Middle East that I opened with a little bit. I've got to, Ron Adcox wants to know, what is TPS? So You didn't comment on that. He said, you'll know what that is. And I'm like, well, yeah, I read the book. Okay. But I remember growing up as a kid, and one of my teachers had a beanbag. And it was just a small little thing. And they would throw it at kids that were not listening in school.
Oh, really? That's interesting.
Oh, yeah. And there was a few of them that did that. They all had beanbags. And it was like, you know, it was like the beanbag wake-up, I guess it was. But I never thought nothing bad of it, you know. I never got hit with one because I always kind of paid attention or tried to. When I was in school, I paid attention. But I never got hit with one. But, you know, yeah, it was just a little beanbag, and they would, you know, toss it around. It was maybe about the size of a, some kind of little pasta or something, you know, that you would eat. But to me, it was funny when the teacher would throw it at somebody and they actually hit them, you know, because we would all sit there and laugh at them because we knew they were dozing off, you know. But there was no big outcry about, oh, teacher, you know, under duress, throws a beanbag at, you know, student for sleeping in class, you know. I mean, isn't class for sleeping anymore, I guess. But, you know, I'm just wondering, like, what do you think about some of the things that I said earlier about all these embassies and, you know, all these killings of American GIs and so on. I asked Carl Higbee last week, former Navy SEAL, retired, and I asked him, you know, do you think that the people over there that we're helping to protect and defend and so on actually deserve freedom or are ready for it? And he said no. And I kind of agree with him.
It's kind of detestable to me. And I realize that there have been millions of people killed through the ages with regard to religion. We're all intellectually sound enough to know that. Yet this is now 2012. And the reality to me that people can get off of their prayer mats praying to Allah and praying to their God by whatever name, get up from their mats and go and kill and destroy is frankly beyond comprehension. I understand anger. I understand a lot of different things. But, I mean, to use God again in this time and era as a reason to kill, I mean, what do you do? Do you turn to God and you see his face and God is smiling at you for the wonderful way you killed that person, for the wonderful way you maimed a neighbor, for the great way you burned a building? Are you kidding me? And there is one word that I think that we all need to learn. And it's a very psychological word. It's a very deep word. It's a word that, you know, only we elites with a great education could understand. And if you're all ready for it, here's the word. The word is, what? I mean, what are they doing? What are they thinking about? Are they completely out of their minds? I mean, it's gotten to a point where they wanted to establish a new normal. And the new normal is a total and complete lack of civility. And it's very difficult to understand to me.
Well, like I said in my opening, you know, I'm trying to think of what other religion will kill people over freedom of speech, you know. I can't think of any.
No, I can't.
And it's just something that really bugs me. It bugs me a lot because there's a lot of people out there that just want freebies. They know how to use a government. I mean, let's not fool ourselves. They all know how to use a government. The people that are getting the freebies, they all have no problem with compassion, you know, on people that need compassion. But as you said in your book, basically, is that you know, we're walking around the idea that a house, car and a house is a mandated right in this country. Well, you know, right now it's cell phones because of getting them. It's not now and has never been a right. It's a privilege, an outcome of hard work, financial discipline, qualification. You only have to look at our current financial and housing situation to know the truth of that. There are no shortcuts, friends and neighbors. What we knew to be true 30, 40, 50 years ago remains true today. There is no free ride, no cheating the system, no quick fix. You take these things out, and you can expect this system to fail and fail. It has.
You're right, Bing. And I think part of the problem is that there's no absolutes in our lives anymore. You know, it used to be if I was on the playground and I was being mean, Mrs. Jones would walk up and say, "Harry Glossinger, you stop that or I'm going to tell your mother." Now, what that meant to me was she would tell my mother would tell my dad, and I was going to be in serious trouble. Nowadays, that same scenario, and the kid says to Mrs. Jones, "I don't care what you say, you big old lady." And he doesn't, because guess what? Mom and Dad aren't going to do a thing to him. And he knows it. Nobody knows it better than he does. And that's the problem. I mean, not the problem, but certainly one of the problems. Today, there are no absolutes. There is nothing for, you know, you start with kids and then you go into manhood. And somewhere along the line, someone's got to teach you right from wrong. And if Mom and Dad don't do it, the cops are going to. And by that time, it's a little late, and it's kind of a shameful thing because, and you see it all the time today, especially with the young, is that they don't have any moral structure anymore. They don't have any internal clock that says, hey, you know, guess what? That's wrong, and I'm not going to do it. I was taught not to do it. I was trained not to do it. I'm not going to do it. And unless that comes back, I don't know what we're going to do in this country, in this world.
Oh.
Well, you talk about the Tea Party movement and so on, and how we can maybe right this country. Can you elaborate a little bit on that? The Tea
Being,
Party
I
movement,
don't
I mean,
think...
everybody wants to make the Tea Party out as racist. I don't see it. I've been in Tea Party movements and been a member for quite a long time. I don't see us as being racist. We want our country back.
Being
and
as I said in my book, every single person who has a computer and has an internet, go to Tea Party Patriots and you read their mission statement. And I've got it printed in my book, as a matter of fact. You read their mission statement, and then you call me or you write me or you do whatever you want. You let me know what you have that you don't agree with. Give me a sentence. Give me a few words. It is all specific. It's succinct. And it's who doesn't believe in these core values? And that's, I mean, to me, the Tea Party is, and I'm sorry, it's just the way I feel, it's the savior of this nation. It is the group of people, and thank God for my generation, because if it wasn't for my generation and some of yours, I don't know where we'd be at all today. But it's the Tea Party that stands up for the Constitution. It stands up for the Declaration of Independence. It stands up for you and me and black and whites and pinks and browns and all of the colors and all the religions. And it, my God, stand. You know, it goes back to, I remember a while ago, and I know there are some listening that probably don't even know who John Wayne is. But John Wayne what's that?
I'm sure there are.
Yeah. But John Wayne was not only a guy that you saw in the Westerns all the time, he was the also quintessential American. And in the shootist there is a quote I need you to hear because it's so incredibly wonderful in its brevity, unlike me. John Wayne says, "I won't be wronged. I won't be insulted. I won't be laid a hand on. I don't do these things to other people, and I require the same from them. Man, is that something.
Yeah, it's powerful there, man. I mean,
and that is as far as I'm concerned, a real you know, if you're going to feel reasonable and fair, that's it. You know, what's it really saying? It's saying, and someplace I think we've heard this before, do unto others as you would like done unto thyself.
Well, that's what the Bible teaches us to do. That's what we're supposed to be doing.
Yeah.
But it seems like there's some people that don't want to follow that. They don't believe in the Bible. They don't believe in the Constitution. They don't believe in the United States of America. They don't believe in capitalism. And the way I look at it, if you don't believe in capitalism, then and capitalism being tied to the hip to the United States of America and its founding, you know, principles, you're pretty much an enemy of mine. And I think we've lost touch with who our enemies are. We're sleeping with some. We're disenfranchising our friends, and you know, we're getting into a big old mess, man.
Yeah, we are, and you know, it's. Certainly, we're not going to have all the answers in this brief phone conversation, but I think so much of it is, and I tried to talk about it in the book, and that is be fair and be reasonable. Recognize where you are and who you are, and are you happy with that? And if you're not, not only can you do something about it, but here are some ideas. You know, I mean, I'm just a resident beanbag. Man, don't take what I have to say any place to the bank because they're not going to cash it. But at least maybe I was told by a sergeant when I was in Vietnam, and he was a guy that wasn't very well educated necessarily, but he had what I guess you'd call street smarts. And he said, not just to me, but to everybody around, you know, don't complain unless you have some answers, unless you have a better way of making it happen. And I thought about that simple statement. I thought, you know, that's right. That is exactly right. So that's why I in my book I give mostly personal things that has either happened to me or that I happened to stumble upon that have absolutely worked. And all you have to do is take a little time with yourself, recognize you do have the conscious choice to be able to decide for yourself. Man, don't let somebody else decide for you. Decide for yourself who and what you want to be. And if you decide that there's a different direction, if I have something in my book that'll help you maybe go that way, that's wonderful. But go to a good friend, go to somebody who loves you. You know, find out what you need to do to get a hold of yourself.
Yeah, that's a core. The you know, you have to take care of yourself first. And that's one thing that you kind of bring up in your book quite a bit. You know, you have to understand who you are yourself. You have to take care of yourself. You have to protect yourself before you can protect your family, before you can protect your God or whatever, or your country. You have to understand what it is in yourself that makes you great. You also have to understand what in yourself makes you weak, and you have to improve on that. On that note, I'd like to get Barbara Buffing in here. She logged in. She wants to talk to you and ask you a question.
Oh, what? Hello, Barbara.
Hi, Barbara.
Hey, you guys aren't scared?
Hey, girl. Ask
can you
away.
Hear me?
Yeah.
And we can hear you.
Okay, I didn't know that. I've related a lot with the book, and, you know, I decided to call in because that's exactly what this country's doing. Obama is rolling over instead of getting up and fighting back. And he's got more patriots coming into the Tea Party because of it. And I'm proud to be a part of that. And I'm proud to be listening to you guys. And I'm really looking forward to your book, too, because I related a lot. And I don't know if you are in the blog at all, but I did put hugs in there when you got to that part where you were crying. Because God works in mysterious ways, I think. Anyway.
Well, the Barbara, if you read the book, man, there's something in that book that will touch your soul. It will touch your heart. There's something in there. There's something in there for everybody, actually.
And oh, I'm sure.
It's a really good read. It's just a really... I mean, it took me, I think, 2 nights to finish, and it's just... You know, there was quite a few things here that I did, you know, that touched me, and I sat there and go, oh, man, I can't believe I did that. You know, in retrospect, I look back and say, that was one stupid thing I did. But, you know, that's part of growing up, and that's part of being... and understanding who you are yourself, I guess, and trying to rectify the problems that you see in your life or whatever. Everybody has those. But, yeah, I'm glad you got the book, man. Read it, and you'll love it. It's a great book. Barry?
Yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah, I know that I'm unable to get... Yeah, I know that my money situation's low, but I'm definitely going to try and find a way to get the book.
Well, Barbara, first of all, I want to thank you for calling in. It's an awfully nice thing to do. And, you know, this is what we've been talking about through the whole thing, and that is, there's not a one of us. I mean, there is not a one of us that doesn't have something in our lives that was less than perfect. You know, something that was either done to us that was less than perfect or something that we did to somebody else. And both are unfortunate. But, you know, as long as we're able to, you know, Christians have a wonderful ability to be able to go to the Lord and to ask for forgiveness, and intellectually, we know that the Lord forgives us because the Bible tells us that, and all of our clergy and ministers and what have you tell us that the Lord forgives. And that's intellectually correct, and it's factually correct. But what I think we're all saying in part is also the Lord forgives, but do we forgive ourselves?
Absolutely.
And
absolutely.
That is such a... I mean... You've got to find a way to grab onto yourself and say, Harry Glossinger, Barbara, Rick, Bing, Michael, whoever it is, I forgive me. And once you can do that, and I'll tell you something else, humor helps, but once you can get to the point of forgiving me, then you can start going forward and doing things you wouldn't believe.
Exactly. And I also, you could also, like, give it away, too, you know, by sharing what
Absolutely.
You're doing in your book and sharing your experience, strength, and hope with others so they know that they're not alone in all these ways that they think they are.
You're so right, Barbara.
Yeah, let me say something, too. Harry, you know, in your book, towards the end, well, actually throughout the book, you talk about loving other people. You know, just say, hey, you know, how you doing? You know, I love you. You know, take care of that kind of thing. It's uplifting. And I just got to say, when my wife seen me write back to you one time on an email, and I said, hey, love you, man. She goes, what, are you, like, turning on me or something? I'm like, I had to say that, man. I had to say that. I said, no, man. I said, you got to read the book. You know, but yeah, it's just, it's an uplifting book. It's just it has something in it for like everybody, in my opinion. I mean, everybody that I know that read it just said, yeah, there's something in there that, yeah, that's me. You know, I mean, I remember, you know, walking down the road and my brother was giving me a hard time walking behind me from school when I turned around and threw a rock at him. I didn't think I'd hit him in ages, you know, because it's like, I don't know, 50 yards out, I ended up hitting him square in the head. Yeah.
Well, I can truthfully say that I have not had a single person, not a one, who has written me back that has said anything other than, I've really enjoyed your book. And that has probably surprised me more than any. I mean, you know, when you sell five books, you know, you figure one of them.
including your kin, you know. No, you know, I
that's
mean,
right. And I was, that was from your dad. Oh, no.
Yeah. I was reading about you. Your dad, you know, wait, you know, back then when I was growing up, it was wait till your dad gets home.
Oh,
you know?
Boy, you're not
kidding. I don't know. I don't know how much stupid stuff I got myself wrapped up into, man. Us kids would go out, you know, in the morning. And so we didn't have internet. We just went outside and played all day. You know,
yeah.
We didn't need to have Michelle Obama dictate us what we were going to eat or not. You know, we ate what we could. You know, we drank out of the pond or creek or whatever it was, and you know, we just had fun. We played. We got exercise, and you know, we weren't fat. You know, so you know, but yeah, then dreaded things. You know, but we would go. I remember one time we went out and got pheasant eggs, and I had this bright idea that okay, we had a lot of pheasants out in the back. That we would collect all the pheasant eggs we could, and we would put them in Mom's stove and turn the stove on, you know, low. Well, stoves come on like at 120 degrees. My mom got home, man, I tell you what, that was heck to pay right there. And then when my dad got home, that was heck to pay right there, too. So I can relate, man. I can relate to all those stories, or a lot of them, anyways.
Well, and the bad part
and
was,
you know what? It didn't make me a mass murderer or anything, you know. I mean, I'm a Tea Party member. I guess I must be. I must be some kind of kook, you know.
Well, but you know, one thing that we didn't know until we were older. I mean, when we were kids, I don't know why, but God gave us the stupidest mom and dad that there were on the planet. I mean, I'm sure yours were the same way. I mean, your dad Bing was just, I mean, you were 12, he was what, 30, 40, and he was the stupidest man on earth. Then all of a sudden you get into your 20s and you realize, boy, he must have learned something from me because he's smartening up. And then you have kids, and then you're sitting there one fine afternoon and you find yourself saying exactly what your dad said to you. And you go, oh, no.
Yeah. I remember my mom saying, just wait till you have kids. Just wait till you have kids. And I'm going, Mom, I don't think it's physically possible. Not for me, I mean my wife, but, you know. But, yeah, I mean, it's all stuff that you just go, and it's just, when you get down to the basics, like you said, it's courtesy, it's faith, it's believing in yourself and believing in what you can do and what you can't do. There's some things people just can't do, and you know, I think sometimes we try to take on the world and we just can't do it. You know, we're not all Samsons out there and
no.
So on. So we have to realize our limitations, but we have to realize our expectations. We can live up to if we really believe in them.
And it comes from within. You know, today's kids, I don't think, are taught the respect that we were taught when we were growing up. I mean, my father would give me a corrective backhand if I looked at him wrong. Today, they don't, a lot of parents don't hit their child.
No, because they're always afraid of this. Yeah. Well, then, too, you know, they're also afraid of child protective services.
Right.
Well, spoiler ad.
Part of the government that really needs to
You know, I'm not sitting there beating my kids to a bloody pulp, you know, not like they did with our ambassador out there in Libya. I mean, he didn't die from smoking inhalation, but anyways, the thing is that I'm not, you know, I tried to be a good parent, you know, and I try to sit there and say, okay, my kids need this or they want this. What is it that you need? What is it that you want? Let's distinguish between the two. There are needs and there are wants. And then there are things that, you know, we give you on our own just because you're, you know, special, you know?
Right.
And I think that we've lost track of looking at that aspect of it, and the beatings that I got from my father, which I guess, you know, I could call beatings, but maybe not. They were just, you know, a good old fashioned redneck ass whooping, you know.
Something you deserve.
You know. Yeah, it made me think, you know, but hey, you know,
don't get caught next time.
You know, we one of our kids at one time had a problem with disrespecting his mom here, right? So we made him wear a sign and said, "I'd disrespect my mom," and walk up and down the road. That was freaking horrible to him.
Mm.
He couldn't believe it. That was killing him. It was killing him more. You know, he probably would have wanted the butt whipping.
Yeah.
Well, I'm going to bring Kurt back in and see if he's got anything to add. But I'm kind of wondering. Hi, Kurt.
Hey.
I'm kind of wondering. What are you looking at now, Harry, as far as like in the future for you? Do you have any big plans?
Well, you know, I'm already living out in God's country, so that's the physical aspect of things has got to be a big part of it. Primarily, I'm just looking for whatever opportunity that I can have, and I thank the good Lord every day for folks like you, Bing. And I'm gonna give you a little plug here, but only because you deserve it. And that is, you know, a lot of people have read my book, and they told me that they were going to read it, and they were going to get back to me with, you know, how they felt about it and all this and that. And very few do those things. And a lot of people still don't understand that you're supposed to be someone with some degree of honor. And if you tell somebody something, you ought to do it. And you said you were going to read my book. You did. You said you would comment on it. You did. And you put it on your blog and wrote as fine an essay of someone's book that you could possibly do. I appreciate you for it. I love you for it. And if there's anything that I can do for you, of course, beyond the millions of things I've already done for you, you know, I mean, let's just count them. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. But you're a good man. Now that's the last part of my paid political announcement. I look for the opportunity to do, frankly, more of this. You know, not for me to talk. I mean, for heaven's sakes, you can tell that you let me run. I'll ramble on forever. But to have the opportunity to talk to folks that to me are the most important things in the world, and that are the folks that are maybe less than perfect, the folks that are kind of, you know, like me, that they're trying and they're coping, and they're doing everything that they can to keep things going forward, and maybe they can read something called the Resident Beanbag Bible, and they can say to themselves when they're done, maybe two things. One, that's a great book that I got something good out of that I can share even with my family and friends because it's important. And secondly, I have a new friend, and his name is Harry Glossinger. And my new friends are Bing and Rick and Barbara and Kurt because we have something in common. We have shared the heart of each other. in, as I say in my book, this isn't a book where I'm talking to you and you listen. This is a book where we're conversing back and forth, just like we're doing over the phone. And to have more of that opportunity to get to talk to the people that I know and love, and that happens to be the four people whose name I've just mentioned, and Michael is included, I mean, that is an opportunity made from God, as far as I'm concerned.
Well, Michael can't talk back to us right now because he is pretty
sick. Oh, that beat.
Right. So we can say whatever we want about him right now, and he can't come back until next week, right, when he gets better.
Love you right back.
Anyways, yeah. Anyways, TPS, what I wanted to know.
Did you just ask me a question, Bing? I didn't hear it. Please say it again.
He was talking about TPS.
TPS or bust. I don't think Ron got the whole answer to that.
I still didn't hear all that, Bing.
TPS or bust.
Oh.
Ron asked, wanted to
oh, now this
that.
Is a. this is kind of funny. Now this is a Christian show. So, but it isn't. So, but TPS means tiny penis syndrome.
All right then.
And I know. And
guys,
that's why I don't actually say it in the book. I put it that way for the very reaction you guys had, which is, because, you know, there are a lot of folks walking the street that have this narrative, they have this opinion of themselves that is so wonderful, that is so grandiose, that anything within reason can't even filter into them. And some of them call it a short man syndrome. There's a tall man syndrome. There's a blonde syndrome. There are all of these syndromes where people have the feeling that they are special. Well, I'm special because I'm in the family of Jesus Christ. But that's the only thing that makes me special that I'm aware of. I'm 6'3". I thank the Lord for making me that. But I guarantee I'd thank the Lord if I was 5'3". Mm-hmm. And the attitudes, the feeling of I am something special, and because of that you're not, that's where that came from. And sometimes you need to have something that is a little outrageous in its statement for people to go, oh, that's what he means. That's why I put it as I did, and that's why I also didn't actually write it in the book, because I knew that someone was going to ask me and that I'd tell them, and then we'd have the opportunity for a discussion. But if I just tried to put that in the book without the conversation with it, it would be like, well, this guy, what is wrong with him?
Yeah, I think you're right about that.
You might be surprised. A lot of people might catch on to it.
I tried looking it up, man. You know, and I read the book, and I'm looking it up, and I didn't know what Harry was talking about, and I couldn't find him. I got all sorts of tactical parties or whatever, you know, and I'm like, no, that doesn't sound like Harry.
Well, that's another thing too, because I did the same thing, Bing. I did because I didn't want to say TPS in the book and then have somebody go online and put in a Google search, as an example, and come up with four or five things, and they think, well, gosh, you know, I mean, they could have been a lot worse than what the real meaning is. So I did that, too, and tried to make sure that there wasn't a TPS that stood out as a as a problem.
You know, what you were just saying can remind me a lot of what I had read in a lot of what I had heard in church about a family running to a campyard and wanting to know about the toilet facilities, but they didn't want to really use the word toilet facilities, so they used the initials BC, you know, which we would think is old-fashioned, right?
Right.
Well, the the camp owner wasn't necessarily old-fashioned. He asked around the trailer park, you know, just what BC meant. They didn't know. He thought they meant Baptist Church.
So what happened is,
and me, I'll find the story and drop that on the not only Tradam but also on Facebook. But I mean, like when he thought that they said Baptist Church, you know, so he brought up this thing about how people spend all day up there and, you know, bring a chair. People are really nice, bring food. I mean, when I first heard that, I almost fell off the pew laughing.
I hear that.
And I'll definitely drop that off to you as well, Harry, so you can take a look at that.
I thank you for that, Rick. Well, Bing, bring this thing back to some degree of reasonableness now, will you, man? I mean, this, we've really gotten stretched out here, buddy.
Hold on, let me get in trouble. I got to dig myself out of the gutter here.
Oh, man, I feel like the only pork chop at a bar mitzvah.
See, I've always been different. I'm the only girl, and I've had brothers. I grew up with three brothers, so I'm always different.
Oh, yeah, you're used to this.
We will pray for you.
Thank
that's
you,
okay.
Ron.
That's what toughened me up some.
I was years ago. I was listening to the Johnny Carson show, and he delivered one of the best lines ever. You know, he would stand up on the stage and he would give his dialogue, and when he said something that nobody cared much about, and they go, oh, boo, you know, booed him. He'd go, you know, man. He said, I feel like how did he put this now? Don't let me forget it. Oh yeah, he said, I feel like the entire world is wearing a black tuxedo, and I'm the only pair of white bucks. That was pretty good.
Hey, Harry, I know you've been, you know, checking us out the last few shows and so on, or a couple shows anyways, and I just I wanted to get this in before our show ended, but what do you think about Ayn Rand and Atlas Shrugged, the movie coming out next week?
Incredible.
Or actually, on the 12th.
Incredible. Anybody that knows who he is and knows what the book is about and now the movie, you need to call your friends and have them tune in, because that's going to be a biggie. And how, Bing, you carried that off, I don't know. But
yeah, that is just phenomenal. As a matter of fact,
Actually, I tell you what, I got to get Rick the link to that, but I don't want him to come out with the show before ours, too.
Hey, Bing,
sorry,
you
going to
show
buddy. Me
a thing?
But, no, I landed Harmon Caslow just really out of circumstance, and he's the producer of Atlas Shrugged Part 2. I'm telling you, if you have not seen part one, you can get it on Netflix. You can sign up for a free 30-day trial on Netflix and download it and get it and watch it. Or you can go, you know, it's like $9 or $10, I think, at Walmart, Wally World or whatever. But the second part actually is going to bring you up to speed from the first part. So they got a new cast and everything. And the first part, they work with a bare minimum of talent, not talent, I could say, but they had an actual great talent, but they worked with a bare minimum of cash, and the producers actually and the directors actually fitted the bill for the movie. But yeah, I encourage everybody to see it. It's going to come up before the elections. Make a party out of it, whatever you can do, you know.
Yeah,
and
as a matter of fact, I just got the trailer up, and if you like, I can play that.
Sure, go ahead, Rick. Everybody stand on hold for a second.
To protect the security of our fellow citizens, for the duration of the national emergency, statutes of Directive 10-289 shall remain in effect. All copyrights shall be transferred to the federal government. All wages and other forms of income are hereby frozen.
It's all happening so fast.
I won't be a slave.
You say you and Henry Reardon found it? A device harvesting limitless energy without fossil fuels.
We're so close to having something they won't be able to fight.
They will try like hell to stop you.
Ms. Taggart,
I think everyone agrees that capitalism doesn't work.
You don't understand the power they have. The government takes what they want and taxes what they leave behind.
One of these days you're going to have to decide which side you're on.
It's obvious that drastic measures have to be taken.
If you saw Atlas, knees buckling, arms trembling, but still trying to hold up the world with the last of his strength, what would you tell him to do?
Where are they? Anyone who could make a difference.
I'm sitting next to him.
I've only got one thing left worth fighting for. This.
If you feel you have the right to use force against me, bring guns.
Time is running out.
Who or what is John Galt? Is he even a man?
Or an idea?
Are you ready?
This is powerful, man. I mean,
as a matter of fact, I had dropped the actual video that from, you know, that's going on YouTube. I had actually dropped it in the chat itself, you know, because there were some phrases up there as well, you know, like who is John Galt and a couple of other things that, ladies and gentlemen, check out the clip that I have in the chat, and if you're on Twitter and Facebook, I'll even drop it on Twitter and Facebook as well, because, I saw the first movie, it is phenomenal, the second movie is going to be even better, I think.
The book was incredible as well, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't seen it yet.
I read the book like three times during my life. I first read it at 18, but I had to read it again to understand some more and so on. And one quote out of the book that I really just enjoy, and I still remember is, I swear by my life and my love of it that I will never live for the sake of another man nor ask another man to live for mine. And I think that boils down to this centrality that you're talking about, Harry. You know, we have to actually understand who we are and what we are. And how we are.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And frankly, Bing, I'm still working on you being able to read at 18. I just thought I'd throw that in,
I got straight A's in English.
It's like you don't ever have to worry about what you may become. You can always serve as a pitiful example.
Yeah. No, I took Evelyn Wood speed reading back then, you know, so, you know, I know how to read, like, the bar going down the screen real fast, but other than that, I can't read a static message and save my butt. But yeah, Harry, man, it was great to have you on. We're going to have probably start closing the show, but I got to tell you, man, get his book. Go ahead and plug it again, man. Plug your website.
Well, I'll be more than happy to. Again, the name is The Resident Beanbag Bible, and you will find it on residentbeanbag.com. And when you go to buy the book, which hopefully you will, you'll see that there's a discount code. Type in radio, and that'll give you a 25% discount. And I am more than tickled to have you read the book, and I'll be even more tickled if you'll contact me and let me know what you think about it, because communicating with you is just about the best there is.
I will commit to
that. Yeah, really.
I will definitely try to find a way to get the book, you know, because, like, my finances are pretty tight, but I will definitely find a way to do so, you know, just because of this. And as soon as I do, I mean, even if I don't read it, you know, I would love to have you come on my show on Saturdays. In fact, I have your... In fact, if you use Skype or something else, you know, I can give you a call on there, and we can talk about a way to get you on my show.
I would be more than happy to do that, Rick. And also, I want to pass along to you and anybody else, if there is somebody out there, and God knows in this rough time that we're in today, there are a lot of good folks that are having a lot of bad difficulties. And all you need to do is to go to resonantbeanbag.com, and there is a place where you can contact me. You send me and let me know that things are tight, then I will send you a code that will give you a free book. I would love to have you read it, and I certainly don't want to have you not read it because things are tough.
Oh, wow.
I love you, and I would be tickled to do that.
Oh, great. Now, are you on Twitter
that's
or
so
Facebook at all?
Pardon me?
Go ahead, Bing. Sorry about that. I didn't mean to jump in on you.
I was just going to say that's just gracious of you.
Yeah,
buddy.
Indeed.
And
I'm
one
such
thing,
a magnanimous human being. I mean, who can believe it?
one thing
I'm tickled to do it. For heaven's sake, it's my honor to do it.
Yeah.
Once you start emailing Harry and he emails you back, you'll just develop such a close tie with him, man. And he won't let you go. I mean, he'll keep it. What's going on? What are you doing? I'm like, okay, I'm busy, man. But, you know, okay, I got time to talk to you.
Hey, one thing, Bing, can I give a quick shout out to our friend Ron? Ron's had tough time. He's had that heart operation and, you know, going through all the painstaking aspects of getting back to 100%. Just kind of wrap your arm around that boy, will you? Let him know that we love him and we're thinking about him and he's in our prayers.
Yeah.
I sure
now,
will. As soon as he gets loose with a GIMP outfit, then, you know.
As soon as he
what? Yeah.
As soon as he loses the GIMP outfit, you know, I might hug him, but, you know.
Well, you know, Ron is from a small town. They're only heavy industry down there is a 300-pound Avon lady.
And she don't knock on your door. She bangs on it.
Yeah. Now,
Harry.
Are you on Facebook or Twitter at all, Harry?
No, I don't. I don't get into that twittering and jittering and skittering and all that stuff. I'm basically a resident beanbag man. You know, I do the websites and the emails and all of that. But no, I don't get into the Twitters and what have you. I probably should.
What? I wouldn't bother.
There you go.
I find it more aggravating.
There you go.
I find it more aggravating.
Voice of reason, right there.
I'm just going to go down a list real quick, just for everybody to get their little chime in before we close out the show here. You know, I appreciate you coming on, man. I love you.
Love
you. I sincerely mean that because I can agree with you, and I'm not really covering your back. I'm up there in front of you. So I just want to say thank you so much for being on Soldiers of Patriotism. Check out his book. Get it. It's a great read. It'll make you laugh. It'll make you freaking cry. I'm telling you, it'll make you cry because you will identify with something in that book. Something in that book will make you identify with what Harry's talking about. But let's go to Rick real quick. Anything, Rick?
Yeah, well, I would like to thank Harry for his wonderful service to this country and also for giving us a laugh today because Lord knows we all need it here. And
yes, we do.
And one thing that I have to say is, okay, for those of you who know me, you know that I'm a big Tony Katz listener and fan, and this from his producer in training, Holly Bacon. Michael Savage is leaving radio, and 97.1 FM Talk in St. Louis, which has Tony on the air from 6 to 8 p.m. on Saturdays, Eastern Time. Hey, the programming director, Jeff Allen, wants to hear from listeners on who to replace his slot with. And if you feel so inclined, you can email him at jaallen@stl.ms.com to tell him that you want Tony Katz. And it might actually help that people who don't live in St. Louis and listen to Tony Katz via the internet. And if you have not listened to Tony Katz, please do. He is a wonderful person.
Tony Katz.
Yeah, definitely do. Rick, if you could put that on Trad Am too, so we could post
that
around.
Yeah, I'll definitely do that.
Down the line, Kurt Blackwood, sir.
Any yes, comments? Sir. Brother Harry, thank you for your contributions. You put it on a level that no one could misunderstand. You've said a lot of great stuff today, but I think your statement about don't complain unless you're ready to do something to help solve the problem, that is one excellent statement. And in part in here, I want to give a quick plug. I'm going political for a second on you here to the people in Tennessee and anywhere for that matter that can have an influence or send a buck. Go to www.SeanCrowell, SeanCrowell, Sean Crowell for U.S. Senate. This is a young man running as an independent here in Tennessee who is going to get my vote for the U.S. Senate seat as opposed to our incumbent, Bob Corker. So look him up and read some of his stuff and what he has to say. And if you can support him, or if you're in Tennessee, support him, vote for him, and convince anyone else that you can to do the same. And thank you again, Harry, and God bless you.
Thank you, Rick, and God bless you, sir.
Thank you, Kurt. Yeehaw, too. Barbara.
Oh, my turn. Woohoo.
Any closing
comments? Harry, really, I want to thank you a lot for sharing your heart and soul.
Thank you,
with
Mark.
Us. Appreciate it. And you're not alone. You know, God is with us all, and we just forge ahead. Thanks.
Good words,
Barbara.
Thank you.
Yeah, and Barbara, I'm sure if you email Harry and tell him about his book after you read it, he'll send you a sticky note with a signature on it. So you can get it on your CD.
All right.
I know him. He's that kind of guy. So he'll do that. Well, won't you, Harry?
Absolutely. You can count on it.
All right. All right, guys. Look, it was a great show. Harry, thank you so much for coming on.
Thank you for the honor.
Please come in next week for Harmon Caslow, executive producer of Atlas Shrugged, tune in the Traditional American Movement, and, you know, keep your eyes and ears out, man. We love y'all.
Love you too. Thank you so much.
Thank you all.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
Bye.
Take care.
Ooh, ain't got no hope, I know they don't, ain't got no.
Drug Power 2. Hello.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely give me the video or the number to that guy from who's producing Atta Shrugged Part 2 because I actually want to talk to him about, you know, like after after the premiere. And one thing that I'm definitely going to do is talk with my mom and see about taking her to see Atlas Shrugged Part 2 as well.
Yeah, get like a group going. Okay, look, it says end episode. What do I do? What should I do here, buddy?
Yeah, just click end episode. And then it says, are you sure you want to end this episode? And then just click end the episode.
Okay, now Michael says he copies a link to that.
Yeah, in the promote. Okay. It all comes up like right afterward. Here, I'll tell you what. I'll do that for you if you like.
Yeah, if you could, because I don't know how to do that, man. I see an episode, and he said, if you click on that, don't click off it or something, because you lose a link or something. I don't know, but...
Yeah, I'll do all that for you, Bing.
Oh, dude, man, that would make my life so, so happy.
Yeah, and I'll see you over at Trad Am.
All right, yeah, I'll be over there in a little bit.
Okay, yeah, talk to you soon.
Thanks so much.
No problem. Bye, Bing.
Bye.